Talk Back with Gary Null, Sundays at 8 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hey, what's up now?
Brother, what's up?
This is a big party, man.
Yeah, brother,
I can dig it.
Stop.
There's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer.
I'd like to welcome all of you to this program. I'm Gary Null, not broadcasting in our studio in New York. In fact, broadcasting quite a distance away. In fact, I'm in a place where I'm using a special remote broadcasting, and it may go out. If it does, then we'll switch over to a backup phone system, and hopefully, since it's a satellite phone, it'll work. This is the 1 hour a week where we focus all of our attention on health and healing. And throughout the entire program, opening up to your thoughts, your comments, your questions. No guest, except for Dr. Feldman, talking about having healthier skin. And at the end of the program, I'll be asking Michael Rupert, whose program follows this, a few questions that I feel that he is in a uniquely original position to answer, more so than almost anyone else I know. Let's begin. And I'm going to give you what I call good news, bad news. The good news are things we can improve our quality of life. The bad news are things we do that destroy our lives. Now, of course, you can turn a bad news into a good news if you chose to make some changes. Unfortunately, most people don't. I wish we live in a world where once people know what choices are the better choices for them and society, they'd make them with some consistency. It's just not the case. But we'll give it to you. First, all good news. Now, a lot of people right now are interested in what can they do about the mosquitoes. With record temperatures across the country and then rainfall, mosquitoes are going to be all over the place. In fact, there are some places where because of municipal cutbacks, they've stopped releasing the dragonflies, which eat the mosquitoes in humongous numbers. As a result, mosquitoes are proliferating. Here are some natural ways that you can help the mosquitoes from not biting you. Create some natural insecticides. Now, these are pretty good. There's citronella oil, and that's a very popular one. It's generally in candles, and you light one of those candles, but just make sure that the candle that it's made from is not toxic, that it has no other chemicals in it, because there's a lot of new reports on how toxic a lot of those scented candles are. Now, you can buy those that are made from natural ingredients that don't have that, but you have to pay attention. And as long as you put the citronella oil candle in a place where it will be able to, let's say, someplace where there's a breeze, the scent hangs in the air, and most type of flying insects don't like the smell of citronella, and they avoid it. Now, some people may have an allergy to it, in which case, don't use it. Then you have lemon eucalyptus. It's very, very common. It's an essential oil. You can find it in most health food stores. And generally, a 6-ounce spray bottle of water can have a few drops, maybe 8 to 10 drops of lemon eucalyptus added, and then you spray that on as repellent. You can put it on your clothes as well. Remember, mosquitoes can bite right through clothing, unless it's very thick. Lemongrass oil is another. It's a natural mosquito repellent, and it can be used just the same way that you would use lemon eucalyptus oil. You also have cinnamon, peppermint, clove, rosemary, and castor oil. They are all good alternatives, and all of those are available in most health food stores. And so I almost always, wherever I'm going, especially where there is in the tropics, and because I'm filming this new documentary, it's called The 12 Tipping Points, a lot of it requires being in some very hot, humid, tremendously large mosquitoes. And these I make myself, and they do pretty good. I haven't had a single bite, and I mean I'm where there's a lot of mosquitoes. There's no reason that the elderly should be going blind in the numbers they are. One way we can help prevent this is with the omega-3 fatty acids. If a person has a diet that has the omega-3 each day, and I suggest just using the capsules because that's the easiest way of going it, the gel capsules, then they can get a specific amount. Now, it is suggested anyone over the age of 40 use this. There was some really good research showing that it can retard the omega-3 fatty acids, blindness, and this was done at the National Eye Institute in Bethesda. Quote, the results in these mice are in line with epidemiological studies and risk reduction by long-chain omega fatty acids. This was published in the American Journal of Pathology, and it works in humans as well. So I suggest that everyone over the age of 40 use 1 to 2,000 milligrams a day of the omega-3 fatty acids. For those of you who have or know someone who has endometriosis, it's extremely painful. There's all types of side effects, sometimes chronic bleeding and lots of pelvic pain. And sometimes that pain is so bad it can keep a person doubled over, and then they have to take anti-cramp medication. But there is a Chinese herbal medicine that has been used in China for a long time, and it's been able to help relieve painful pelvic disorders, and including endometriosis. Now, there are two clinical trials that I'm aware of, and where they actually use this Chinese herb, and then they tried that against conventional hormone therapies for endometriosis, and it did just as well, but without the toxic side effects. It says, quote, I think the positive message is that Chinese herbal medicine may offer equivalent benefits to conventional medicine, but with fewer side effects, unquote. That's Dr. Flower, the University of Southampton in the UK. And by the way, just if you don't understand what goes on with endometriosis, little tiny pieces of the tissue that normally line the uterus or the endometrium also unfortunately grow outside of the uterus, and often on the ovaries, in the fallopian tubes, or anywhere in that pelvic area. And like the endometrium, this tissue changes with each menstrual cycle. It thickens, and then it breaks down, and it bleeds. And this builds up, and then you have scar tissue outside the uterus, and you can have very heavy menstrual periods. I counseled a woman who was bleeding about 22 days a month, and had chronic infections. She's cured now, but it took about 6 months. So you can look at the Cochrane group online, that's C-O-C-H-R-A-N-E, library. It's one of the most prestigious libraries in the world. By the way, the herbal mix with Danzol, a drug that blocks estrogen secretion, did not show an improvement. So this is, again, one of those things where the Chinese medicine works. Now, keep in mind, the Chinese have been documenting the type of therapies they use, combination therapies, for thousands of years. There are many books written on this. And yet in the United States, we just look at all this as nonsense. That, well, you know, we know best, and yet time and again, what we think we know isn't best. In fact, we end up giving people drugs that have been falsified in their testing, that a placebo, a sugar pill, works just as well, especially with the heavy tranquilizers, and the side effects that the drugs are pushing on people. If you notice, it's death as a side effect. To me, that's simply unacceptable. And the Chinese combination is known as Nai Yai Wen. That's N-E-I-Y-I-W-A-N. And you can look that up, and there are texts on Chinese medicine, and you can get that in any compounding pharmacy, or you can get that in one of the Chinese stores. For a long time, we've known that a healthy diet will reduce your risk of heart disease. Now, the latest study on this is from Harvard Medical School. A group of scientists looked at the health of 20,000 men in the Physician's Health Study, and they looked at the lifestyle and what role lifestyle played, meaning diet and exercise and stress management, and they were followed for almost 23 years. And the lifetime risk of heart failure, assessed at age 40, was about 1 in 7. And what they found was, if you stick to a healthy diet and exercise, you can reduce your risk of high blood pressure and heart failure, in which the heart cannot pump enough blood to supply the body with oxygen and nutrients. And this was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. But it's a substantial improvement. Now, there was a separate study conducted by Dr. Foreman, also from Harvard Medical School, involving 83,000 women in the Nurses' Health Study. And they also found that if women had lower body fat content, the average woman is about 26%, and they really should be around 15%, 14%. And if you lower your blood pressure, and if you exercise for 30 minutes a day, and if you eat a principally vegetarian diet and healthy, and if you don't have the alcohol, and you don't use pain medications often, then you will live a longer life. The trouble is most people don't do all of that. They may do one of that, or two. Now, it's not difficult to live healthy. It's just the average American is not inclined to do so. Now, there is another new study that I just read, and I thought was very important. It was given at the Alzheimer's International Conference in Vienna, and it talked about whatever is good for the heart in the way of diet and exercise is also good for the head, meaning you reduce your risk of cognitive decline, which is one of the precursors of Alzheimer's. Now, I've been saying this for a long time, that since your blood flows through your body about every 6.5 minutes, if you have the right antioxidants, then you're protecting all the cells of the body. If you have the right hormone levels, that's protecting the body from too little or too much of a hormone. If you have the right phytonutrients, the reds and the greens help both detoxify the cells and then rebuild the damaged DNA. Additional nutrients can help lay down new mitochondria. The new energy cells can really make a difference, especially if you're then using the right nutrients with coenzyme Q10 and NADH. Suddenly, you no longer have that aging fatigue. Over the age of 40, a lot of people simply slow it all down. Thinking, cognition, memory, it doesn't have to be that way. Now, olive extract has been shown to benefit both those who are overweight and the obese. There's a new study where they tried an extract from extra virgin olive oil, and they were able to stimulate the mitochondria, the very energy factory cells I was just mentioning, and that helped prevent diseases associated with diabetes and obesity. The results of the study indicate that the what are called hydroxytyrosol may influence gene expression, which would influence mitochondria function. And remember, the mitochondria are the energy plants of the body. Every cell has them. So generating chemical energy by producing adenosine triphosphate, the body's energy currency. So when you give the right nutrients, and olive oil is a principal source of fat in the Mediterranean diet, olives and olive oil. By the way, it's very common anytime you're in the Mediterranean, at least the Western Mediterranean, not the Eastern Mediterranean, you can sit down at a meal and they'll bring you a whole plate of olives, all different types. You just don't get that in the United States. I wish we did. We bring that rotten bread out and butter, the last thing in the world you need. So this was published in the Journal of Nutritional Biochemistry. It was done at University of California, Davis, in the Human Nutrition Pilot Award Study. So the more olives, the more olive oil, the less problems with obesity and diabetes, and the more energy you have. And last up on the good nutrition here is we now know from the latest studies that when you eat broccoli and broccoli sprouts together, either fresh or in powder form, that according to new British research, you're able to reduce prostate cancer incidence. Let me quote this. And this is, again, as all the things I cite, they're all from peer-reviewed literature. And this is from PLOS One and Cancer Letters and Nutrition and Cancer, all three peer-reviewed journals. Quote, British researchers recently reported that broccoli consumption results in significant genetic changes associated with protection against prostate cancer. These findings build on numerous observational studies showing that greater consumption of broccoli and other cruciferous vegetables is associated with reduced risk of prostate cancer. And then it goes into the study. So the more broccoli, then you're getting what is called isothiocyanates. And that promotes hundreds of really good genetic changes by switching off genes that promote cancer and switching on genes that fight cancer. And for those of you who've only used green tea, remember you can also use white tea and red tea. In an article just published in the Journal of Nutrition and Metabolism, researchers in Germany show that an extract of white tea helps prevent the formation of mature adipose or fat cells in culture, as well as reduces the fat content of these cells, which could help reduce body fat. That's good. And the more potassium and the less sodium, the less likelihood of high blood pressure, the less likelihood of stroke. And this was in a new investigation from Harvard Medical School where they looked at 2,000 men and women with pre-hypertension for 15 years. And they found that the sodium to potassium excretion rates over a period of time where you had too much sodium, too little potassium. So start using less salt and start using more potassium in your diet. I'm Gary Knoll. Now let's shift gears. And I'm going to take some calls in a moment. Our number here is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Now that was all good news. Now I want to give some of the bad news that you can change into good news. The risk factors of cardiovascular disease are rising in the poor and the young. People under the age of 30 in particular. Now, this is from mainstream science. This is Science Daily, and this was an article in the Canadian Medical Association Journal, similar to our journal, the American Medical Association. Let me quote this. Cardiovascular disease is increasing in adults under 50 and those of lower socioeconomic status, despite recent trends which show that cardiovascular disease is declining overall. Untreated cardiovascular disease can lead to heart failure, coronary artery disease, and death. It is the most common cause of hospitalization in North America. Our results indicate that young people are increasingly bearing the burden of cardiovascular risk. The study called Trends and Risk Factors for Cardiovascular Disease then took a look at this. Now, they simply say that the young people and the less educated are greater risk. But they don't tell why. I think it's relatively easy to understand why. It's this simple. When you look at what youth today are exposed to, from the time they are just toddlers, they're taught to want what they see on television. And then they want the candy, the sugared cereals, the soft drinks. They get into school. They want coffee. They want the soft drinks, want the fast food meals. The amount of calories and sodium and fat and protein in the fast food meals has been increasing. And as the amount of really bad nutrition that you're getting is going up, because many of these burger chains and pizza chains are competing. Oh, we'll give you a bigger pizza. Well, we'll give you more cheese. We'll give you pepperoni and more cheese. Oh, we'll give you two for the price of one. We'll give you bigger than a quarter pounder. We'll give you a pounder. It just never stops. We'll give you extra french fries. We'll give you a cola with that. None of this promotes health. All of this can contribute to disease. This is no secret. And then one day, you realize that everything you've been doing is bad. And by the time you become intellectually aware of how you've been manipulated and lied to and used as just nothing more than an income stream for corporations, and you say, well, gee whiz, didn't we have a Surgeon General? Didn't we have U.S. Public Health Service? Didn't we have different agencies who were supposed to protect us? And the answer is, well, we have those agencies, but you'd have to be extraordinarily naive to think that they're there to protect you. They have never been there to protect you. On any level, they always, first and foremost, protect the very powerful, wealthy corporations. Why is that? Well, that leads to the second story. And this story is from the Washington Post, Dan Egan. And it says, lobbyists spend millions to influence healthcare. Quote, drug makers, hospitals, and insurers continue to pour millions of dollars into lobbying during the second quarter of this year, hoping to limit the damage to their bottom lines. And it says new disclosure reports began to arrive and Congress showed familiar players at the top of the healthcare heap. And Pharmaceutical Research Manufacturers of America, the American Medical Association, Blue Cross Blue Shield. And then behind these, of course, are the lobbyists for the soft drink industry, the artificial sweetener industry, the sugar industry, the burger or meat industry, the egg industry, the cheese industry. All of these groups, everything that you eat or drink, there is a trade association that is there to promote the product and protect it from adverse publicity. They even hire scientists to do sham studies to show that their product is okay. Their products are not okay. And then they go into a legislator's office and they tell the legislator they're willing to support them in their next re-election campaign, but they have to agree upon certain rules and certain laws and certain protections to the consumer being watered down or eliminated altogether. I think the worst case of this was when we had the repeal of the law, the Delaney Amendment. Now, Delaney was a House member from New York State, and he passed a law saying that no product could be used in America as a food or beverage if it caused cancer in any amount in humans or animals. So if it caused cancer at all, it was gone. That was the only law that we had that protected us against cancer-causing items. The people from the artificial sweetener industry really went to town, and they managed to convince the legislators to repeal the Delaney Amendment. And since that time, we've had no law that protects us against cancer-causing agents. So now you know how we end up being so sick. And only the people who we put in power are fully aware of how complicit they are in this whole process. And yet we continue to trust the political process, the lobbies, the special interest group. It's all corrupt, and we should know that. Also, you've heard me say many times there is no such thing as safe radiation in any amount. One single X-ray at any point in your life will cause cancer at a later point in your life. That's according to John Goffman, the world's greatest authority on the dangers of radiation. This is the latest from Kim Evans, Natural News. Quote, radiation increases breast cancer rates. And I'll quote this. Researchers recently found a direct positive connection between girls receiving more radiation for cancer and developing breast cancer later in life. A positive correlation meaning the more radiation they receive, the more likely they were to develop a tumor later. Not, of course, that this is a type of positive thing. When looking at the information such as this, it's important to note that the effects of radiation are not solely harmful to girls being treated for cancer as children, nor is radiation given to people with cancer the only form of radiation that the human is exposed to. Most people are exposed regularly to radiation from x-rays, mammograms, wireless internet, and cell phones. And exposure to radiation in our society is common. Its effects are understated by medical doctors who often dole it out and mainstream consumers. Part of the problem is that science likes to extrapolate downward. Science, by its nature, isolates variables and attempts to show direct linear relationships, if it's possible. Now, sometimes, however, direct linear relationships aren't possible to show due to multiple factors that are common in life, yet impossible to replicate in a controlled study. But the real problem comes into play because there is a decided lack of extrapolating upwards from what is known and what is found in this manner. For example, regardless of the fact that countless studies have shown direct connections with various poisons in the body and the problems of the body, someone in a position of authority might say, you can't prove that a person eating specific pesticides will definitely get cancer, or that people exposed to other known toxins, chemicals, will definitely get another very specific disease. Therefore, there are no such things as cancer-causing chemicals. I mean, that's the kind of warped logic they have. We don't live in a world where we eat one kind of food or we're exposed to one chemical. The average American consumes over 250 toxic chemicals a day in their water and their food, and it's increasing, not decreasing. So we're seeing people get sick younger in life. We're seeing all forms of illnesses that we didn't see in the past, and yet doesn't seem to matter. And finally, drug-induced dementia is common in seniors. And what this is showing in this particular study from Public Citizen is that as people get older, they're more likely to take some form of medication, and they're not looking to see what are the side effects and loss of cognition, memory, awareness of oneself, where you're at. That's dementia. That's one of the common characteristics. Drug-induced dementia. But we're an overall medicated society, and the money's in the medicating. And so we're not going to slow down medicating. So just be aware of that. I'm Gary Null. We're going to come back in a moment and take your calls. Our number here is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Please stay with us. Back in a moment. Let's say hello to Marie from Long Island. Hi, Marie.
Gary, how are you?
Doing great, thank you.
I have two quick questions. What would make your carbon dioxide stay to a low end? And also your specific gravity in a urine test. If you drink a lot of water, I understand you wash out your salts and then the specific gravity goes low. How do you keep it where it should be, which I had understood about 1.025, if you need to drink a lot of water every day?
Well, first of all, there's two. You're getting a feedback. Hang up, and I'll just answer the. All right. You're dealing with two misconceptions. You don't wash out your sodium when you take some water. If you did that, you would simply die very quickly. What you do is you dilute the blood. But the body cannot hold an indefinite amount of water. And any time you have water, you thin out the blood. And also, when you are exercising, you're using a lot of sodium. And unfortunately, people don't realize that there is a pump at every cell called the sodium-potassium pump. And the body will conserve sodium if you're running too low. The kidneys are responsible for that. But we have almost always the opposite. We have too much sodium. Now, a person can get by on 800 milligrams a day. That's fine with the amount of sodium in the diet. And but we're taking in anywhere from 5 to 15,000 milligrams, and that's definitely contributing to edema. It imbalances the potassium-sodium pump. It feeds cancer. It can also cause problems with osteoporosis. It can cause problems with accretion of hydrochloric acid. It can cause weakness and edema, swelling in the face and in the legs, and it's terrible for circulation. So drinking water will not throw all the sodium out of the body. That's simply a myth. And therefore, as long as you're within a normal range, that's fine. And as long as you are breathing deeper and diaphragmatic breathing, now, of course, you don't actually breathe through your diaphragm. You breathe through your lungs, but the lower part of your lungs are rarely used. In fact, even yogis only use about 3/4 of their lungs. And one of the things I try to stress with the athletes is that half of all exercise is breathing. And controlling your breathing is essential. By breathing in deep and conditioning yourself to breathe deep, you are creating a greater oxygen supply, which is carried in combination with heme throughout the body and then released in the cells to allow a transfer of that energy in the cell, and that's also how you create energy within the mitochondria. Otherwise, you end up with hypoxia, and then you have cells literally starve because of oxygen debt. So just practice deep breathing, and you can enhance that with what are called methyl donors, such as vitamin E, tocotrienols, coenzyme Q10, L-carnitine, NADH, ginkgo biloba, and ginseng, two adaptogenic herbs along with the other nutrients. All right, all the best to you. Chris from New Jersey. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Gary. Thank you for all you do. You've changed our whole extended family for the better, down to my grandchildren, so thank you so much. I have two questions today, quick ones. One is on behalf of my adult son, who says for his work he must have a cell phone on his person all day long. Where on his body can he wear this terrible thing?
Well, understand that no matter where he wears it, he is increasing the risk of electromagnetic pulse going into there.
Yes.
Unless he took the battery out. If you take the battery out, then you no longer have a charge coming in, and you put the battery back in when you're using the phone. That's one thing. Separately, I suggest that he uses what is called a blue tube. A blue tube is not the same as a blue tooth, and that would allow him to have at least 12 inches to 14 inches of space between his ear and skull and the input of that electromagnetic pulse. But it's the whole phone that is carrying the whole electromagnetic pulse. You should also get one of the gold mesh screens that you can put over the receiver part, and then use the speaker part of the cell phone. That way you can put it away from your body, and as long as the phone is about 6 inches or more away from the head, you reduce by about 95% the danger. So you can still use a cell phone, but you're not allowing it to be right up close to your head. Okay? All the best. And let's also say hello to, who do we have else here? You have to give your name. I want to know who you are. I have several people here, but they're anonymous. Anonymous doesn't get you on the air. You shouldn't have any problem giving your name and where you're from. All right? If you'd like to call in now, give us a call at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I want to share a couple thoughts in a little different area, and this deals with human nature. And the first is liquor ads invite teens to party. This is from Health Day News. Quote, rockin' parties, sexy people, getting the guy or girl, being popular, these are themes teenagers say they take away from alcohol advertising, according to a recent survey that found evidence that liquor ads are targeting young people. Of the nearly 500 Maine teens surveyed, two-thirds of the 13 to 18-year-olds agree that the alcohol industry is trying to appeal to underage youth through its advertising. And this was published in the Maine Youth Empowerment and Policy Group. In addition, more than half of the teens who saw an alcohol ad on television or in print believe the people portrayed could be under 21, the legal drinking age in Maine. The group recommended that the industry take better care in placing ads where teenagers are less likely to see them. Well, that's not going to happen. Now, my point of view on this, I look at it the other side of this, and I look at it this way. We should ban all advertising involving alcohol where teens are going to be exposed. Instead, we should have public service programs explaining exactly what happens when alcohol goes into the body. Show it. Show a person who is undergoing a liver transplant. Show cirrhosis of the liver. Show an alcoholic liver. Show what happens, for example, we have the capacity with animation to show how many brain cells are literally killed with each drink of alcohol. In fact, I was going to submit a 60-second short, but I just didn't get around to it. I'm so busy filming, and I just finished two feature films, which will be premiering together in 2 weeks in New York and L.A. I have two more that are finished that are in editing and post-production, and I'm filming two more. So there was just no time in my schedule to do this. It wouldn't be very hard. But I'll tell you what my idea was. I was going to open with a group sentenced to death. And you see these people all dressed in white, on their knees, hands bound behind their back. And behind them, much like the Chinese do, being shot in the back of the head. Generally, you pay for the bullet in China when you're executed, because they have very strict rules on making sure that your death doesn't cost the state. And then just show one shot after another. But then you start to see the front of the person as they're dying of this gunshot to the head, and it says the head, then the heart, then the liver, and the pancreas. And show how many people are unaware, or not how many people, but how many cells are killed by unaware people. It's about 2 million cells with each glass of alcohol. But just imagine the impact of watching an execution that happens in actual execution, because you're killing a cell that was there to love you, protect you, to honor you, to never say a bad thing about you, to be 100% on your side. That's a completely spiritual cell. It was born perfect and with the eternal message of all spiritual connections in itself, and you're executing it. Now, on the one hand, we have a nation of youth that are selfish, self-absorbed, idiots. They've got the intelligence of a brick, though I haven't interviewed all the bricks I could, so there may be a smarter brick. They don't care about anything. They don't care about you. They could care less about the world they live in. And they show up and expected that somehow they're entitled to everything, and you're supposed to clean their dirty underwear, make their beds, cook their meals, give them their credit card, and at no time say anything that'll make them feel bad about themselves. On half, it is their responsibility. The other half, it is their parents, who are probably the worst parents in history. And that's what we have today facing us. Now, there are certainly exceptions, but there are minor exceptions, just like there's some very conscientious, health-minded, caring, loving adults, but they are maybe 5% at best of our society. And if you doubt these statistics, I'm very methodical in how I come to my figures. Go back and look at how many vegetarians we have. Then look at how many people are actively against any war. Then look to see how many people protest any injustice or any violation of civil rights or human rights in the United States or elsewhere in the world. Then look at how many people do things that are out and out selfish and stupid. Then ask yourself, what do these people expect to happen when through their selfish indulgences they get sick and then suddenly they scream that they expect to be entitled to something? Okay, at any time when you were doing these self-destructive things, did you stop and ask yourself, can you be responsible for the consequences of your actions? And then as a huge society, we say they don't have to be, because we will never hold someone responsible for the choices they make. We don't hold banksters in New York responsible. We don't hold senators or House members responsible. That we keep voting them into office. We voted Bill Clinton in after NAFTA and GATT. We voted for Bush after, you know, the war in Iraq and showing that it was all lies. So it doesn't matter how bad you are. The only thing we will not tolerate is if you don't have a certain look, if you don't wear the right clothes, if you don't have certain personal mannerisms, that we are absolutely intolerant of. And that'll get you non-reelected. But as long as you're charismatic, as long as you're charming, as long as your whole life is a series of getting woken up in the morning at the White House and taught platitudes, the public are going to ask you today that they're out of jobs and they're out of food and they can't afford stuff. How are you going to answer? All right, our script writer said, I feel your pain, and we're all suffering, and we're going to do our best to stop this suffering, and we're going to make those people responsible. We're going to make them aware of this, but we can't make them accountable because we keep having to look forward. Remember, never look back, always look forward. Unless you make a mistake, and if you're so poor that you end up having to steal a banana, then we have to make an example out of you, and we'll send you to jail, in which case you'll probably be raped and beaten and some tattoo put on your body and you have to join a gang. But that's because you're a bad person. But the rest of us, we're not bad. And so the wealthy are not bad. The corporate America is not bad. The killing of people for money like Vioxx, that's not bad. That's good business, and we need that business. So and you just sit there and think, holy God, what kind of strange movie did I just walk into? Who's writing this script? And then you realize the average American can write a script equally as warped, equally as perverse, equally as insane. Friend, what do you think is going to happen when you eat the next cheeseburger? You're already overweight. You already have high blood pressure. You know that you're just one tipping point away from having a major episode. Is that what you want? No. But it's going to happen. So are you prepared for the consequence? Are you willing to say, what lesson can I learn from my behavior that's led me to these suicidal and self-destructive characteristics? Or not? Or will you just hope that you can get through it so you can go back to doing more? And right now, we are a nation that has learned no lesson on any level about anything at all. We are not learning the lesson of the Middle East that when you're yoked by tyranny, that you stop and go on general strikes. We have the unions, but all of our unions are corrupt. All of them. That doesn't mean all the members are corrupt, but they're complicit. Because we could have stopped all this madness in America had we gone on general strikes. But we haven't gone in a single general strike, not one. But when 100 million people in 22 Arab League nations went on general strike, they brought the government down, or they caused a change in regime, or they brought what they were grieving about to the attention where they had to have their grievances addressed. In the United States, just the opposite. We have just as much tyranny, but in a different form. We have illegal wiretapping. We have now they want to give us all smart cards, and those are the idiot Republican nominees, like, oh my God, don't even get me started on what kind of morons they are. And the average American sitting there and watching this as if this isn't happening. Their kids are obese. Their kids are on medications. Their whole lives are screwed up. They're couch surfing. They bought crap they shouldn't have had. They couldn't afford. Why? They didn't wake up one day and suddenly decide to just be completely destructive and suicidal. But these are long-term condition responses, and we're not willing in our society to take an honest look at why people end up making the choices they make. We seem completely oblivious to the fact that we can drive a big SUV, yet we're past peak oil. We think we can move to Tucson when they've run out of water. The aquifer there is going to dry, and in 16 states, but those are the very states people want to live in. So be damned the idea that we don't have enough oil or water. We got enough for now, and so I'm going to go there. And we have the military spending $1.4 trillion, and we refuse to acknowledge that. And Bill O'Reilly actually said, and I have a tape of it, I'm putting it in my new film, we have this clown saying that once we go to war in Iraq, if you do not support us, then I will personally view you as an enemy of the state. And who exactly gave Bill O'Reilly the right to condemn people who are not in agreement with our imperialistic, militaristic, corporate-dominating wars in Iraq and Afghanistan? And who, what kind of idiot watches him? Or Rush Limbaugh? Or these other blowhards who are megalomaniacs, are like the Lonesome Dove character. They're so caught up in their own sense of self-importance, and yet people go right along with it. But where are these people? Where were the 120,000 teachers who rightly protested a lack of the ability for collective bargaining, but then went right back out of that as if that was a noble gesture and went back to eating at fast foods, getting their kids fat and on medications, taking tranquilizers they didn't have, shopping at Walmart that was causing their jobs, continuing to use fuel that we did not have, and refusing to think about the consequences of that plastic bottle they're drinking out of, or that non-organic spray that they're using around their house that could affect their children and cause cause Parkinson's. Mindless living. That's where we're at today. Totally mindless. So the question is, are we at all capable of stopping what we're doing and saying, what lessons can I learn? Can I be responsible for the choices I make? And if I can't, then is it best just to hide behind the idiots on the left or the idiots on the right? Because they're both idiots. The president's an idiot. All these people are idiots. None of them have an answer. The answer they have wouldn't work. None of it's sustainable. And why is it anyone who is giving us information that is honest and sustainable? It terrifies us. We don't want to hear that information. It scares us. We'd rather see one more view of a mindless, complete moron who's got a big ass, and that's the only reason she became famous. So I guess if you've got a big, fat ass, you can become a multimillionaire celebrity with no brains. Like, whatever that woman is. It's so insulting, like a Paris Hilton. But if you have brains, if you're a Nobel Prize winner, and you care about the world, and you offer some solutions, we don't want to hear it. It's too heady. You're a pinhead. And since when did Bill O'Reilly have the right to call people pinheads or patriots? This is a cult. The celebrity cult. The conservative cult. The liberal cult. And Keith Urban's no different than Bill O'Reilly, just from a different perspective. I don't see any of them dealing with real issues in a way that gives us solutions. But then again, the average American is sitting back as if they don't need solutions because they're sure that this theater is just too much enjoyment to walk away from. And that concerns me. So that's why I do my show differently. I do it with positive information for positive people who are looking at making change and break free of the existing paradigm of official life, official standard, official morality, official ethics, official conditioning, because none of that's going to help you. It's all an illusion. But it takes a certain amount of courage to break free of that. And for those of you who are breaking free or have broken free, good for you. For those of you who haven't, hopefully you will. For those of you who haven't and don't intend to, there's no reason for you to be listening to my program because you're not going to like what I'm going to say and you're not going to benefit from it. Better you listen to one of these other shows that serves your needs. I'm very clear about what I'm doing this for because I'm not being paid to do it. And I'm very clear that I believe that America is worth saving, but nothing in the existing paradigm of official institutions is worth saving. Nothing should be reformed. I don't believe in reform. I believe you should change everything. But that's not going to happen any time in the near future, so if we can't change the corruption within every institution, then change yourself and get yourself as far away from those institutions and get around other people who share your common beliefs at a higher ideal and a more sustainable way. Otherwise, you won't appreciate, until you are free, how much of a prisoner you were to your former beliefs. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment to take more calls, and we have Michael Rupert standing by and Dr. Martin Feldman, so please stay with us. Back in a moment.
Spending
I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Nall, and Michael Rupert, whose program follows this, is on the air now. And I wanted to bring him on because I had a few questions for him. Nice to have you on, Michael.
Hi, Gary. How are you doing?
Doing great. Michael, right now we're seeing this paradox of being past peak oil, yet refusing to acknowledge it by making no substantial changes in our lifestyle. And the moment the economy benefits some people, they think, I don't have to do anything about the environment because I've got money and I can afford something. And even those people who are challenged are not coming together and realizing, gee whiz, if I can't afford to use my car by myself, why not have other people share that car? So therefore, there's a sharing of things. We're not getting the message that we're past peak water, we're past peak oil, we're in a commodities bubble, we're in a situation that we cannot sustain, and yet we continue to look for the Democrats and Republicans, the current leaders, to give us the talking points, and we're not looking at any other solution to our problems. I'd like your opinions on what you see the downside of this to be. And finally, this. I believe that America is headed towards social anarchy. I believe that the people that have not been given any attention or empowerment or solutions, the lower working middle class, the lower working class, will be the ones who are most likely to engage in this conflict. And they're about 65 million. The upper middle class, the wealthy class, the working class, the professional class, and the poor class, they're not going to get involved in anything. They don't, they won't, they haven't. You're not going to see them protest anything. But this whole other group, no one's paying attention to, and I'm out there talking with them, I'm filming them, and man, are they angry. And I don't see them as going to the streets in any polite way or any nonviolent way. I see social, absolute anarchy and class warfare. I see them beaten down. And your thoughts on that? Do you see any of this happening, or do you think that we'll have somehow a rebound and have a happy outcome?
Oh, of course I don't see that, Gary. Something happened a couple of days ago in my yard here. We have an apple tree, and we had dumped a big load of topsoil there, and we've been using that throughout the summer to make new garden beds. But that topsoil leached down right on top of the roots of the apple tree, and a branch, huge branch, fell off yesterday, and it had like 8 times more apples than any other branch. The branch fell of its own weight. And I, you know, that's a perfect way to describe when things are out of balance, as they are with peak oil and human population. When things are out of balance that way, the situation will correct one way or another. That's what's happening. Very clear demarcation now, Gary, between the zombies who want to believe all that crap, and people of our consciousness who understand that a new human paradigm is here. And that line's getting drawn pretty firmly now. And when it comes to social unrest, you're absolutely correct. I mean, I see it this way, Max Kaiser. Many of us who follow this closely see it. This is not going to be just social anarchy. It's going to be like chaos. It's going to be crazy. Fakrent. It's going to be ludicrous. And I don't think we have begun to see the kind of insanity that we're about to experience yet. So. This is a very scary time. Tonight's show is going to be good. Some of your listeners might want to stay. I'm having Carolyn Baker back on. She's a pillar of this new consciousness, a founding pillar, and she's a therapist, and she writes all about the emotional, the spiritual challenges of this. And we're going to have a good talk tonight because I think everybody right now is holding their breath.
How long do you see before we reach a tipping point, and I believe that it will be a tipping. It won't be slow. It'll be all at once. When do you see it happening? And as a former L.A. police officer and special investigator, how do you see it manifesting? Just give us your idea.
Well, I've said clearly, I've issued an alert to all of my members at CollapseNet that July would be the pivotal month in the global economy. I base that on shrinkage of earnings following Fukushima. Now, this is a classic case of the people who will never get it and the people who do. The earnings reports have been cooked a little bit, but it's like, so there are people who will say, well, that's proof that everything else isn't happening, whether it be Europe, Wall Street, the looming default of the U.S. government, the already admitted default of Greece, and the fact that tens of thousands of Japanese are eating radioactive beef. I mean, you can either see that or you can't.
By the way, they have completely altered the percentage of the United States deaths against gross domestic product. And they say it's only 56 to 58%. Do you know what they excluded? They didn't put unfunded and underfunded entitlements, which totals $79 trillion into that.
Yeah, this is hopeless now. It can't be saved. And even if they print some new hocus-pocus paper by August 2nd or maybe a week later now, it's not going to change the outcome. The outcome is here. This is the pivotal month. This is where people learn that paper is not power, that words are not power, that power is power, that, you know, you can't eat money. This is the point that we're at right now. And I said clearly it was going to that July would be the pivotal month, as exactly it's proving to be.
We look forward to hearing more later. Thank you very much, Michael.
Thank you, Gary.
Let's shift over to end our program with Dr. Martin Feldman, and he's here to talk about having healthy skin. Hi, Marty.
Hi, Gary. Very important issue. Everyone out there likes healthy skin. I have a special perspective whereby I test many patients who come to me with mild skin problems and some with severe skin problems. What I do is I profile where they're deficient. And most mild skin problems have the same pattern of deficiency. When we fix the deficiency, the skin revives. Those actual deficiencies also show us how to optimize skin function. And here's some of the things that are out there that people don't understand really yet, don't respect yet, don't understand yet. Healthy oils, key issue for healthy skin. First off would be, as you mentioned earlier, omega-3. Omega-3 is a subdivision of a healthy oil. It's found in that we can avoid fish oil by using algae, DHA from algae, 1,500 milligrams a day. Although we also have now calamari available and krill available, or fish oil itself, but we don't want to overfish the oceans with too much fish catching. Next, very critical would be flaxseed oil, helps a great deal, although the omega-3 is more important in terms of the fish or the algae. And next is borage oil or evening primrose oil, which has a component of what's called GLA, GLA in borage oil. Very, very helpful for the skin, underappreciated. GLA starts at 300 milligrams a day. You might have to go even double that. Another one that's the lipid. These are lipids. E, vitamin E, is also a lipid, and vitamin E is very critical for healthy skin. And E is available as mixed. The best way would be mixed tocopherols, starting at 400 IUs a day, even going double or triple. You have to really avoid all trans fats very, very, very diligently. Plus, you have to consider in the background olive oil, which is a sort of an omega-9. So we have all this, so far, all lipids. Vitamin D is also sort of fat-soluble, critical, helps the skin a great, great deal. And vitamin D, we start out with 4,000 units a day for openers. If you're out in the sunlight, we've been through this, that if you're, let's say, in Miami at noon during the summer, in 30 minutes, you're going to have 5,000 IUs of D. D is very helpful for the skin. You can test your vitamin D level in any lab in America. CPT 25OH, 25-hydroxyvitamin D. CPT 82306. And on that, we want to have it above 50 on the report. Next would be the whole issue that the skin is a major organ of elimination. And this is appreciated only by persons in our field. Conventional medicine doesn't look at this too carefully, too closely. But if we tune up the liver, it usually helps the skin a great deal because if the liver is excreting toxicity efficiently, the skin doesn't have to do that. So the skin gets a rest, can repair itself, can optimize itself. And liver rebalancing is very, very effective. The support groups we've been doing now for many, many years, whereby detoxicating the liver is a major aspect of all support, of all health in the whole array of nutritional medicine, whereby the liver has to get a reduction of toxicity. We have to reduce toxic foods. We have to reduce all sorts of toxins into the system. Plus, we have to optimize absorption. If we optimize absorption, the liver gets a rest. Also, if we optimize absorption, then the body can absorb those critical, critical healthy oils, which are underappreciated, omega-3, 6, and 9, the vitamin E and the vitamin D. So we have a issue of optimizing skin, a different perspective. It's an issue of healthy oils, which are not appreciated, and it's a very simple thing to do at modest expense and very, very effective with no risk.
I appreciate the input. Thank you very much. That's Dr. Martin Feldman. He can be reached at his office at 212-744-4413. If you miss a program, by all means, go to the archives, Progressive Radio Network Archives. Have a nice evening, everyone. Look forward to sharing more on our next program. Stay tuned for Michael Rupert.